Welcome to the Three Educator Brothers Podcast, a podcast about all things education through the experiences of three black men in the field. My name is Edmund.
My name is Mark.
It's G Stunner on the mic, you know this.
And that's Pat. and we're here, we're talking about episode 8, and the title for this episode is Tough Love, which we're really going to interrogate throughout this entire podcast for today.
Tough love or black love?
We're gonna get to that. So let's kick it off and talk about our margins of blackness, where you know we really want to provide a space to unload, you know, some of the things that we've been going through as men of color, as black men, before we enter this space.
So I'm gonna open it up in full transparency. The day today is February 6th, and yesterday was the 5th, and it was it would have been Trayvon Martin's 23rd birthday, is Jordan year, and I'm really in a spirit of thinking about that. And I've also been doing a lot of spoken word recently, and I had his name on one of my poems that I performed, and I just want to read a small excerpt that was kind of on my heart, just to honor his, you know, his passing. The poem starts off as "They Live." I want my kids to go to Michael Brown University and have water balloon fights on Rekia Boyd Avenue, shoot hoops in Eric Garner Park, and hope they get to drive through Trayvon Martin's Scarborough Bridge just to study at Philando Castile's library. And I go on and on in this poem. As I'm discussing, I end the poem with saying, I think you get the point. I want my kids to live in a world where black lives do not get to. And in this poem, I really, you know, all the monuments and flags and restaurants were named after black bodies that were murdered by police brutality, victims of police brutality. So just wanted to take a moment to appreciate Trayvon Martin, because he wasn't able to be 25, but I'm 25 today. And, you know, in a lot of ways, we are similar because we share this black skin.
Yeah, and, you know, I want to reflect on that, too, because, you know, Trayvon, the death of Trayvon was a big thing for all of us. But, you know, for me, it was kind of a turning point. And to understand, you know, Trayvon died, what, 5 years ago, I believe. Right? And to understand that, you know, we're still fighting a good fight today.
Yeah.
Like, with the same intentionality, with the same force that we were a couple of years ago. But, you know, I think Trayvon was a hero in many ways. He was a martyr. In many ways. And I forget who I was listening to. It was a rapper. And I forget which one it was. But they were saying, like, you know, nobody wants to be a hero. Right? You don't want to die a hero. I think heroes are okay with dying for a cause, but nobody wants to die a hero. Right? You want to be somebody who is actually, like, you know, living to see, like, kind of like, you know, what's coming from all the hard work and effort that you're putting into it. But, you know, rest in peace to Trayvon Martin.
And I appreciate you for bringing that up as well, because, you know, white supremacy feeds on the fact that there's so many, you know, there's so many instances of oppression that happen in such frequent sequence that it's like, you know, it preys on the fact that we are just going to become numb and overwhelmed by how much is going on, because we still got to survive. We still got to pay rent. We still got to find happiness. And so taking the second out to really pay homage to Trayvon and all the others that you mentioned in your poem, absolutely necessary.
Yeah, because especially in the spirit, it's actually our first episode of Black History, and especially in the spirit of honoring the greats. I think all those who have died, the Eric Garners, the Rekia Boys, the Philando Castiles, the Walter Scotts, the Freddie Grays, the list goes on and on and on, that these people, although they are gone but not forgotten, and they have become part of our history but also our future in many ways, you know. And I hope our educators in the building, you know, inside and outside the building, you know, have taken the time to make sure this comes up in the classroom. You know, so I'm already in a unit right now dealing with gun violence in urban communities, but also I do a whole characterization unit on how black bodies are typified in the media when they're murdered as well.
That's dope. That's dope. So
that's real, man.
Let's dive into today's topic.
Yeah.
Today's topic is tough love. So let's kind of start the conversation discussion as to, you know, why tough love? Why now? And what do we plan to, you know, to gain from this conversation?
I mean, the origins of the conversation, you know, was partially brought up because Valentine's Day is coming up. Shout out to all the single heads out there. You know, we stand with you.
I was a singular week.
A singular week.
I'm in a minority
happy,
out here.
Committed, loving relationship. Had to read that out loud. Just kidding.
Yeah, bro. Congrats.
Love you, girl.
Congrats, bro. You know, in light of Valentine's Day, and then also, you know, I think that in light of Margin of Blackness and in light of the podcast as a whole, I think, you know, we have similar experiences in light of navigating this world as a black man, having to have almost a separate code of conduct that you have to abide by in order to, you know, it's understanding your surroundings. Like, you know, I know Chris is always talking about how, you know, these hip-hop artists that are rapping about their communities, they are directly in line with science. You know what I mean? They're literally observing their environment, taking notes, talking about their environment, and providing strategies for change. And you couple that with the conversation of, you know, having OGs in the game or having people that you look up to, like in the conversation of black love. Like, the way that I conceptualize it is that growing up, sometimes the men in my life who had the largest impact and who, you know, were tougher on me because they understood how we need to navigate in this world were black men, other black men. And when I was a kid, I was kind of, you know, you're not my dad. Like, what do you, you know, I was kind of like standoffish about that. But as I reflect back, it's them seeing themselves in me, you know. And so, like, in this conversation of tough love, It overlaps almost directly with the concept of black love and what, you know, I guess it's like, you know, where do y'all see the similarities and the differences?
Like, yeah, I think it's important to, like, first define it, you know. Google Almighty actually has a definition for tough love, and it says tough love, a noun, promotion of a person's welfare, especially that of an addict, child, or criminal, by enforcing certain constraints on them or requiring them to take responsibility of their actions. I'm trying to figure out what is
sounded mad colloquial.
Yeah, this is real colloquial. And I wonder how do we define tough love, if anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think
with that definition real quick, I'm gonna couple it with, you know, our good friends at Urban Dictionary define black love as a spiritual journey that only people who are rich in melanin can experience, a love that is unconditional, a love that can build an empire, monogamous and genuine in intent. This love cannot be stoked. Wow, that's unfortunate. They misspelled stopped, but it cannot be stopped.
And it's also interesting, too, they also use, and we're not at all saying Urban Dictionary.
This is an incredible source.
But for the culture, Urban Dictionary partly does some work for the culture. But I think it says to care for someone while remaining unsympathetic and being strict. And the sentence, I love the sentence because I think it really gets at the heart of what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
Children need tough love today in order to become productive members of society, right?
That's
a sentence as an example that I actually gave.
So that was for tough love.
That's for tough love.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it's important. Like, let's kind of conceptualize.
Right.
You know, I think the obvious definition of tough love, which kind of hit the nail on the point. But
on the head. I'm sorry. Continue.
But nails do have points too. But anyway,
fine. You don't get the point.
You could though.
You're right, but it wouldn't go in.
if you hit with no force, it would.
This is a mere,
anyway,
mere details. Scientists. Mere details.
I think the idea, you know, the idea of tough love is, let's talk about it through an educational perspective, an educational lens, right? Where we're in schools, we've all had those teachers who are extra hard on us for X, Y, and Z reasons.
Us,
right?
As in black boys, black children, children of color.
Let's just say us as black men, right? Because I want to speak from my personal experience.
Sure.
And I've had teachers, you know, oftentimes teachers of color saying, like, yeah, I'm just being tough on you because, you know, the world is not an easy place to navigate.
Right. Yeah. Right. A perfect example. I was grading the Regents exam with a couple of educators from across the city. And it was this woman who was at this school and told me directly, and I see where she was coming from. She told me that I feel like I need to have my to be tough on my students. Right? Because when they get out on the world, there's no second chances. They need to be prepared. They need to be ready. Because if I want them to learn here in my classroom, in order to get them ready for the future. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what's your thoughts on that, and like, have you experienced that in the classroom too, and maybe the benefits and drawbacks?
When I hear you say that, the most common thing that I think about is the ways in which, you know, when you have conversations around teaching to the test, or, you know, the work that I do is along the lines of a shift away from traditional education, and it's like an ideological shift that forces individuals to navigate thoughts of, like, what is the purpose of education? What have I internalized as a teacher, thinking that this is the role that I need to be the locus of knowledge, and I'm pouring this into the students' heads, and students, you know, don't necessarily come with any knowledge. Like, these are things that we've been conditioned through our experiences. And so when we're teaching to the test, or we're teaching, you know, because when I'm hearing this, it's about preparing students for the structures that we exist under while still finding a way to, you know, liberate them to be agents of change within that system. And so it's difficult in a way because, you know, some pedagogues that I've been in close contact with are so focused on preparing students for the reality of the regions or the reality of the structure that exists that they're not focusing on how to empower them to acknowledge that this structure doesn't define me. Mm. You know what I mean? And so when I hear that, like, I'm wondering if there's any sense of, like, cognitive dissonance, or, like, just, you know, when you're presenting or when you're preparing people for the world at hand, if we ourselves see that the world is flawed and that there's so many ways to change it, like, where is the line between preparation for the world and preparation to change it?
Yeah, man, I understand where you're coming from, right? And we talk about tough love, right? As an educator teaching sixth graders, I can't say that I was tough on students at certain points because I thought they needed it, right? And now reflecting on the times where I've been tough, or, you know, I may have scolded a student because they may have been making the same mistake constantly, and I got tired of it. I'm like, yo, bro, you can't get it right. But now, you know, in conceptualizing, like, what tough love is, right, and having this conversation with Ja, you know, I kind of think of it differently, right? I understand where the idea of tough love comes from. I understand the purpose of being tough on students of color, especially black boys, and them not getting second chances, because more times than not, they don't have second chances, right? So we have to allow them to make mistakes, be tough on them so that they understand that, you know, I need to correct my mistakes before I go on to the real world. Totally get that. But when we talk about the idea of tough love, right, and you're talking about in terms of instruction, right? So, like, let's say, like, you know, talk about a teacher who was great in the regions, like, I need to be tough on my students. You know, I don't want us to mistake tough love for rigor in the classroom, right? And I don't think that's what we're doing. But when we talk about, yo, I need to be tough on my students, let's say academically, like, for me, I interpret that I need to be more rigorous with my students, right? Mm. Being tough on your students, for me, kind of entails, yo, I'm going to grade you harsher than I grade other students, because the reality is that when you get out there, you're gonna be graded harsher, right? Mm. And oftentimes we're tough on students of color, right? So students of color, we're tough on them within a space where they're supposed to be safe, where they're supposed to be able to make mistakes before they, you know, they navigate the real world. But if we're tough on them now and we don't allow them to make the mistakes, if we don't give them learning, if we don't provide learning opportunities for them to make those mistakes and grow from them, then they're just gonna be. They're going to just experience consequences in school, outside of school, all over the place, right? Mm-hmm.
And you think about the disproportionate suspension rates and discipline. Like, that's the tough part, but it's not reciprocated with love.
So,
like,
here's...
But I think that can be argued, too, right? Mm-hmm. Because people can be doing it with the intention of loving students, right?
Intent versus impact.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right? So, like, if I'm, like, you know, let's talk about discipline, right? Mm. Student... makes the same mistake as maybe playing fighting or hitting a kid all the time. Like, yo, this is the third time it happened, right? And I, you know, we know in schools, right? How restorative justice is a new thing that's now being used in many schools. It's only in a few schools across the city. It's only in a small percentage of schools, right? Not many people are trained in it. But how often are students really asked to reflect on, like, the mistakes that they've made to grow from them? That's not something that we ask from students, right? So if we're not asking them or providing them space to be reflective, to learn from their mistakes, then I don't understand how we could be tough on them for making those same mistakes.
Here is, I hear you. Yeah. Here's my pushback a little bit,
please.
Right? That, like, when we talk about tough love, it's only prescribed and talked about when we talk about black and brown children. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is a problem.
That's
right?
A problem.
That tough love happens in the classroom, and it happens, like, outside the classroom, too, right? And I'm thinking of this book. It's called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome by author named Joy DeGry. And she talks about, she gives an analogy of basically being online at a bank when she was a child with a black mother and seeing a white mother with her white daughter. And the white daughter is kind of playing and philandering around the bank and being joyful, right? On the other hand, when the black young black girl tries to do the same exact thing, her mother kind of like pulls her to her side, mm-hmm. right? So what message does that send to the children, to those kids, right? That the children, that the world is safe enough for white kids to play in, mm-hmm. but not safe for black kids to play in.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I say that because...
Freely.
And I say that because too often, what I hear in tough love, I often hear us and people saying, you need to work twice as hard mm-hmm. to get XYZ far,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. And the problem I have with that, I think Coach talks about this in Between the World and Me, he says, well, what message are you sending to people or to your kids from the beginning if you're saying you got to work twice as hard mm-hmm. all the time? Because mm-hmm. on the opposite end, you're saying, in actuality, you're half as good.
Right. Mm.
To be equal, to work twice as hard, is to actually saying from foundation... Mm-hmm. Right, you're almost saying subliminally, you're not as good,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is, although outside the classroom is inequality, mm-hmm. and people aren't seen for what it is, right? I think the classroom shouldn't always mirror outside. It shouldn't be, I need to teach my kids this way because if not, sure. it's gonna be all hell for them out there.
Sure.
That's not your job as an educator, right? Because
right?
like you shouldn't be reproducing the inequalities inside the classroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like too often on my own school, dealing with a white educator at the time, right? He said like, oh, a kid has to dress up this way and pull his pants up this way and wear this for the presentation because we get to a real job. But yo, he's in 10th grade.
Right, right.
He's not even there yet.
Right.
Right?
He hasn't applied for a job yet.
You ain't teach him how to write a resume yet, but you want to teach him X, Y, and Z. So like, in what ways is tough love actually like stripping the humanity of children?
Yeah.
And when I'm hearing tough love as well, I'm trying to be cognizant not to conflate tough love with what we need to give to black students, because mm-hmm. I'm wondering if there's a white student in a predominantly white school who is acting up, like, does the teacher have the inclination to give that student tough love? You know, I feel like sometimes we use... we use almost like coded language to still represent black, and we do it like, you know, when we're talking about statistics or we're talking about housing policies, we talk about under-resourced, we talk about free and reduced lunch, we talk about inner city, but ultimately in our minds we're thinking black and brown students.
Right, automatically.
So like how do we, when we're talking about tough love, because I'm doing it myself, like as you were talking, I was just like, wow, when I think of tough love, maybe it's because of my positionality as mm-hmm. a black man, but like I'm not inclined to show a white student tough love necessarily.
It's also because the way that we've kind of been programmed, when we talk about urban education, we talk about teaching brown and black students, we look at brown and black students through a deficit lens.
Right.
Mm. Right? That's just how the scholarship reads.
Mm.
That's just kind of how we're taught. And it's super unfortunate. And it's a lot of it is we have to unlearn it.
Yeah.
Right. Teachers across the board have to unlearn it. Because even teachers of color, and they're probably, you know, the most susceptible to this. It's like, yo, we have to just like provide nurturing environments for our students to grow, right? Because my first year teaching, I'm like, yo, I want y'all to be great. Y'all are a reflection of me. I'm going to be tough on y'all, right? But then over time, you know, number one, it backfires, right? Because when you're super tough on students for no apparent reason, they're like, what's wrong with you?
Right.
Like, you're not cool. Like, we're not going to engage
you.
You
gotta earn that.
Yeah, you have to earn it. But I do understand, like, I understand, so now there's a difference here now. So now, because I was on the other side, opposite side, and I'm kind of swaying towards the tough love in this instance, right? Mm-hmm. In the instance when you're an amazing educator and you explain the realities of the world to your students, and you explain, okay, we're doing this, but it's not tough to me. It's being rigorous, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yo, I want y'all all to pass this New York State English regents, right? And I'm gonna tell you how the world sees you. The world sees you as people, as students who are gonna fail.
And I think that's the problem, though, right? Like, it's to work again. Like, I think maybe you can help me like demystify. Once I hear tough love, I hear like this idea of like. Almost working twice as hard, right? Because if you work twice as hard, it's just like, because at the end of the day, what that do to work twice as hard, or to disseminate tough love, is just to compare you to white counterparts, right? So, and I think like I forgot her name, the author of who wrote Why Are All the Children Sitting Together? Tatum. Talks about like, we gotta stop treating our black children as carbon copies of white children.
Oh yeah,
you can't, right? And I'm not saying that's what you're saying,
right.
But I'm saying like, yo, that's like this idea of, I need to prepare you for the real world. It sounds like yo, I'm gonna prepare and educate. I think it's problematic to say I gotta prepare my child
to be
accepted by white people. Which I understand, right, is a way of being, way of navigating, and like we also have learned, because I think as black men from Caribbean, African American, and Haitian background, right here too, and African backgrounds, right, that we've been taught on parted ways to navigate this world, right, and how we are, that like, yo, my mom took me through the tough love. It was tough love, you know what I'm saying?
Right. And the other side of that argument, right? Which I agree with everything you said, right? But I'm saying, like, in terms, so, and you know, the tough love to me is just like, you know, how do you increase rigor within your classroom? Because I argue that a lot of teachers in schools are not rigorous, right? And they're like, yo, these, you know, they deflate, you know, their instruction and their pedagogy because they look at students through a deficit lens. Like, I'm teaching brown and black students. I'm teaching in the hood. Mm-hmm. All right, let me get this level one stuff because, you know, I got a couple of kids on level one, you know, not teaching towards the kids who are on level three and four. Which may be a handful, but they still need to be taught to. But besides the point, you know, let's say we're training, we're teaching kids, we're preparing them for the English language regents, whatever. And the reality is that these students they're not on grade level, right? Let's just say that's the reality, right? I'm a firm believer, when I taught my students, right, it's also about like, as an educator, teaching students to understand where they are in their reality within the classroom.
Personality, right?
Right? Mm-hmm. So, like, okay, if I'm a level one reader, right, and I need to develop my skills, my students knew that, right? So, okay, I'm level one. And it's all about telling the students, like, this is where you are, but I don't think this is who you are.
Right.
Right? So let's work towards getting to level three.
That's not a problem. That's to level two. That's real.
And exactly, right? That's real. But many people will categorize that as tough love, right? Mm-hmm. I think what's problematic around the phrase tough love is that everybody has their own perception of tough love.
Right.
Right? For us, right, those, you know, and those educators who genuinely care about their students, right, and who do really good work in the classroom, you know, they may be able to, you know, provide tough love through different various aspects of their teaching, right? But there are also people who come, you know, I have a conversation with a different educator or whatever who might be outside the community, who may be a part of the community. Like, oh, all right, so I heard this thing called tough love, yo. Let's crack the whip. What y'all doing? You know, X, Y, and Z. And that's not going to be effective,
right?
So I think that what we really need to focus on is, like, how do we, number one, interrogate the notion of tough love, but number two, kind of rationalize it in the sense that, you know, this is what tough love is. This is why we're tough on students, and this is why you shouldn't do it, right? Which is I know what I just said, it's super weird, right?
Right.
And very
we're like right.
We're with you, but like for me, it's like, so what I would do right now. I would like make a statement saying that, yo, I don't believe in tough love, right, in schools as it relates to education because of all the problems that we talked about before. And I would just say, yo, instead of tough love, let's be more rigorous with our students, right? Because when we talk about tough love, that could be interpreted through various ways, right?
I agree.
But if we're talking about rigor, we're talking about academic rigor, Love don't mean, rigor don't mean, yo, you come up at lunch, you know what I mean? Rigor means like, yo, you need some extra help on this assignment. Come up at lunch. Let me help you work. Let me push you.
I don't think that's rigor. I think it's just doing your job.
That's not rigor. That is doing your job.
When I think of tough love, and maybe I'm not even looking at it as like, oh, and what I'm providing in terms of the pedagogy or the curriculum to students, I'm more really, really interested in, like, the ways in which we have this ideology that says, I need to do this to prepare you for the real world.
Yeah, right, right.
And I feel like the only reason I'm stuck in this place is because I could be wrong, but I don't believe white teachers that teach white children are saying, like, when you get out in the real world, it's going to be like this.
Right, right, right.
Then I say, you got to get this because someone's going to judge you based on what you don't know.
Right.
If you don't say this word properly, it's going to be this consequences for you. Oh, when you get out there, Joe Schmo's looking at you. I'm realizing, what I'm also not saying is, too, is that people that are employing tough love, I'm not saying it's coming from a malicious place.
No.
I'm only saying I really believe that people that are doing this, doing the work, right, that believe in this tough love thing, or just doing it subconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, they're broken too.
I'm more interested in the effect that has on the child.
Right.
Of course. But
my thing is for us to be able to tell a child that you need to have these sets of skills in order to be prepared for the real world, we're not acknowledging that that child needs to be in a mindset where they feel like they belong in the space, where they feel like they have security, and where they value education. And, you know, value isn't it. When I say value, it's not referring to, you know, just their capability or you know, willingness to engage. It's more so their students come in with sets of values that they care about, regardless of what it's rooted in. Maybe it's rooted in, you know, a brotherhood that they're a part of outside of the school, or the clothing that they're wearing, whatever. Like, they have their own set of values, and if we're just sitting at the front of the room being like, y'all need to do this because y'all need to do this, you know, like, that, right, that doesn't necessarily click. Because, mm-hmm, you know, when I'm thinking and when I'm hearing about, like, the rigor that you all are talking about, you know, what about the 80% that's non-cognitive, 80% of learning that's non-cognitive for students, you know, like, how do we, I was just in a workshop with a couple teachers in our program, and, you know, one of the teachers was like, for the first time, I actually sat down with a student, and instead of coming at that student with like, yo, you need to do this and this and this, I sat down and I was like, yo, how's your day?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like, what are you interested in? You know, and that sounds obvious. That sounds like just good practice. But, you know, the life of a teacher can be difficult. And especially with 30 kids in the classroom and no co-teachers, like, to be able to sit down with each individual student and do so is, one, you know, teachers need to get paid more. We know this. And two, like, you know, in terms of, like, that teacher's a human being.
Right.
And in terms of the you know, the brain power to be able to have, like, intimate connections within the span of a school day with each individual student is difficult. But so when I hear tough love, like, I feel like the manifestations of tough love, especially as black men onto black, you know, students, oftentimes comes in the non-cognitive, which you know, brings up the conversation of skin folk ain't necessarily kinfolk, because it can be, I think the most dangerous thing is like, you know, a black man that believes that he's doing right onto a student, when in reality it is, you know, not acknowledging that student's whole being.
Right.
Yeah, I totally agree. I kind of want to circle back to what I was talking about rigor. Like, obviously, coming up for lunch is not rigor.
Yeah.
But what I mean is, like, you know, how do we step up our rigor in our instruction, right? Because often, you know, you go into classrooms like, okay, complete this worksheet, read this text and answer the questions, right? You know, obviously, I believe that, you know, the way that we're teaching our, obviously, I think that we should be teaching our children and our youth differently than we are now. But I think if we couple, right, the rigor, right, we're providing students a critical lens to look at the world.
Right.
That's the combination, right? Because the tough love really comes from, like, yo, I really want my students to understand the realities that they're going to step out into the world in, right? Which is beautiful. I totally understand that, right? I wish that I knew that some of the realities before I navigated certain spaces.
Yeah. Facts.
But what we can do as we're teaching content is provide students an opportunity to look at the world more critically, right?
Right.
So, like, let's say we're in our English class or in our math class, and, like, all right, cool. Let's look at math, right? Let's look at high school stats and college stats, and let's compare them. Are students prepared to go to college? Are students taking remedial courses in college? And let's interrogate it, right?
Mm.
Let's put the data within the hands of our students and let them interrogate it, right? And let's have them uncover the inequalities that exist.
And just to add on to your point, like, so in speaking to the educator I was grading the regions with, and asking for like advice or what should I do, what should she do, and I offer what you just said, mm-hmm. right? Why don't you give kids the language mm-hmm. in high school to get have them navigate what's going on in the outside world? So, for mm-hmm. example, teach kids about microaggressions, mm-hmm. right? I'm teaching honest English this year, and part of the curriculum is giving kids the language to call things institutional racism, mm. to call things sexist, to call things, amongst the many things. Because one of the reasons I do that in some way too is like, yo, I didn't have this language in college mm. until I got to college,
right?
And I feel like, how dope would it be to give my students this now in high school? Mm. Not because it's tough love, but because like, yo, because I didn't get this thing, I want to give it to you now. That when you get in my position, you're able to. You can't just say, yo, that's racist. It's not that it's just racist. Also, it's more than that. It's linked to an institution. Mm-hmm. Like we shouldn't just teach students like what the term racism actually is, but also like how is that linked to power, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like what I hear you saying is like, instead of saying simply, oh, I gotta prepare kids to get into the real world by managing their behavior or the way they speak, but instead, we should actually help and encourage students through the curriculum that we teach.
Mm. Yeah, so all of our perspectives have changed on tough love. Am I right or wrong?
And I wanted to.
No, I was right when I came in.
Yeah, I also was interested too because I also it bothers me because I'm a little bit like this idea of love and teaching in the first sentence. In a sentence,
yeah.
Like I'm not also saying like, yo, like you have to love teaching in order to teach. Hmm. You don't have to love, and like that's one lens. And I also wondered, maybe because you got it too, like this idea of pedagogy of love. Because I heard like mm-hmm. Some of our people that we kind of keep up with mentioning that too. You know, because mm-hmm. I wonder when I got interviewed, by. A person from TC, and I realized I kept saying this word love, and then in my edits I kind of crossed it out, mm. and I don't know why I crossed it out, but it made me uncomfortable to see my words on paper saying love teaching, love my job, love my kids, mm-hmm. right? Like because it felt like I was doing, it felt like seeing it on paper, especially mm-hmm. with my white woman, in some ways, it felt like this idea of like savior. I love my kids. I love my job. Like mm-hmm. when I generally do, right. I realize I'm doing this is activism to be giving back. But in some way, like this idea of love in the classroom, love in teaching, see it on paper, maybe kind of feel uncomfortable.
For real?
I don't know what it was.
I feel like love is perfectly, symbiotic with the educational experience if done correctly. Because I don't know if you're thinking of love in the, because we're conditioned to think of love as romantic or,
But for me, it was a little uncomfortable, too, because I was reading my words or reading the interview, I was thinking about that person outside of the classroom reading me on paper and thinking about, like, he loves this job because he loves his kids and love. It felt like I was... romanticizing the work.
Yeah. Right.
When and the reason why I crossed out the word love is because I feel like the job at times by people outside the classroom isn't taken seriously enough. Because I feel like when we think about business mm-hmm. and money and Wall Street,
ain't no love in that.
And you don't think about love. It's about grit, and that's about rigor. It's about making money and things like that too. Although you may love the money, right? Loving money and loving teaching doesn't ring the same bell.
Well, because the loving money and business in general is a symptom of the capitalistic society that we, right. what I mean? Like, it's not foundational to our human experience to abide by a dollar bill. Like, I feel like when you are talking about love in relation to education, imagine education is happening within a vacuum. Like, nothing else is around. It's just education. At its core mm-hmm. would be the love of, like, the same love that a mother gives to their child would be the love that, if you have the best interest for your students in mind, mm. you're able to just like, and again, this is happening in a vacuum because obviously we're all tainted by the society that we live in. And so what we may see as best intentions may not be the best intentions for the student, but imagine that they were, mm-hmm. And at its core, education is about love for your student because you're preparing them for the next step in life. Like that's, what I mean?
Yeah, and I think, this conversation I think is super important. I think it's also important to recognize that everybody has their own way of doing things, right? And I think that's one of the most problematic and beautiful things in education, right? Because, you know, as a teacher educator, I really train my teachers like the same way I would work with my students, to have a critical approach to things. My pre-service teacher's like, yo, Dr. Adjapon, if I encounter this situation, what should I do? And I'm like, well, I can't give you an exact answer, but based on my context and my experience, this is what I would have done. Right? So that answer is not an answer for every single context, every single school. But we gotta prepare teachers to be more critical as to, like, in the way that they're approaching and engaging students, right? Mm-hmm. When we talk about this whole idea of tough love, if teachers are really working to increase the rigor of their classroom, to really push their students to think on a higher level, right, I respect that. If we're talking about the whole love thing, I tell my students I love them all the time. Like, I'm like, I love you all, you know, I care about you. Because, you know, I think oftentimes they don't hear enough, right? I never, like, my parents never told me they love me. I know they love me, but, like, come on.
That's problematic, bro.
Yeah, you know, I'm welcome to my world. But,
that hurt me.
Yeah. But I think it's cool for you to acknowledge that you have a love for your students, a non-romantic love,
which pushes against the common notion that teachers are not allowed to, you know, be friends with their students or have like a friendly relationship with their students.
I don't believe. Yeah, I mean, I take my students out to lunch sometimes. Like, right. if you do something super dope, right? Like, I took working with two young men, like, you know, really pushing them and trying to just provide different opportunities and experiences. I want them to kind of see the world, right? And obviously that weight should not only fall on my shoulders, but, like, you know, went to, like, the Friday down the block from the school, like, you know, order what you want. We chatted there for like half an hour, and I bounced. Right. They stayed, whatever. You know, it's important because, like, as an educator, right, when you're working with students who've been in schools and who kind of been, like, pushed out of schools and had the same negative experiences around schooling, you kind of got to try something different.
Yeah.
And what's problematic around education is that, like, something different means something different for every teacher, right? And I'm not saying that your something different has to be the same exact thing as mine, but we got to provide teachers a lens to really look at things through a critical way and an appropriate way. They need to follow the code of conduct, obviously. They're there for specific reasons. And we need not to be afraid to be empathetic for our students, right? We don't need to be sad for them, but we need to be empathetic and understanding, like, their situations, their realities, and their experiences, right? It's like, okay, your homework is not done today. What's going on at home? Or, you know, what do you have to navigate to get to school? And, like, okay, I'm not giving you a break from the homework, but I do want you to bring it back to me tomorrow, right? As opposed to some teachers like, yo, you don't got to say, I don't want to hear nothing. I don't want to hear anything.
Right?
So the whole idea and notion of tough love, I think, is one that we need to continue to interrogate. But for me personally, I just be like, yo, you know, forget the tough love. Let's talk about rigor.
Right.
I just got a question. Are y'all more inclined to show tough love to students of color? And I ask you this through the lens of, you know, we all are in this world with our own set of prejudices and biases. And I think that the scariest thing is when I'm talking to an individual and they're not willing to speak through their positionality or acknowledge that, you know, they probably see me in some type of way, because, you know, that's coming with a colorblind approach that I don't have time for.
Yeah.
So, like, do y'all feel more inclined?
It's hard, bro. Like, again, like, and I think that I'm bouncing back, like, because, again, like, this tough love, right? To answer your question in generally,
yes.
I can't imagine teaching students who aren't black and brown. I've never taught white students. I taught, like, in my past 2 years of teaching, I taught one white student.
How did you interact with that student?
Like a human being.
yeah, that question was wild.
But
how did you interact with them? Did you speak to them?
But it was interesting, though. Like, it's interesting. It's different, right? But, like, I think, I don't need to mention tough love, but at the end of the day, I'm thinking about, like, rigor. What you're talking about? High expectations.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's high expectations and there's tough love. At the end of the day, I have an expectation for my students to meet and achieve. Mm-hmm. Not saying that I treat them all the same way. That's impossible, right? But I have high expectations for each of them individually. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where I'm at. right? Because I do believe I love my job and I love the students. And the reason, the only reason why I think this idea of love in the classroom is important, right? Because I think students, especially students of color, can read people like quickly, right? And if they don't see a genuine care or respect, right, they will become like disengaged. You'll see some behavior problems. Like my students know that I can, that I am there for them, right? And that's why we work together so well.
Yeah. So,
with that being said, my fault. I just took a bite of my salad. I'm a, you know what I'm saying? I'm eating meat less. I told you that on the New Year's episode. With that being said, should we hop into final footnotes?
Let's do it. So my footnote would be, let's move away from the notion of tough love and important tough love for our students. But let's, as opposed to tough love, let's really interrogate our teaching strategies and our pedagogies, right? And the way that we're interacting and engaging with young people. And let's provide them a perspective of the world and the realities that they're going to kind of step into when they get older through our concept and through the classroom, right? Because I think the notion of tough love is like, man, the world is hard out there, especially for you as a man of color, which it is. It's not a lie. But let's let the students uncover that through our pedagogy, and let's let them be like, okay, in order for us to be prepared, we need X, Y, and Z.
With my final thought, I'm just thinking of how there's defined explanations for certain words or certain ways of being, and then there's the way you perceive them. You know, perception is reality. And coupled with my Instagram page, I just revamped, changed the name, follow me at Prince_imprints. And so with each of my captions, I've kind of been having a word that has a standard definition and then kind of how I see it. And in this conversation, one of the ones I had was cope. So cope is a verb, and in my mind, it's to console the hole between the soul and the capsule. And so like thinking about that, you know, we're constantly in this state of acknowledging that this world is, you know, racist and you know, white supremacist and patriarchal and you know, cisgender dominant. And so with that comes, you know, if you are in the work of social justice or you feel of like a moral inclination to justice, you know, you see that the world is not where you want it to be. And I think that in this conversation around tough love and preparing our students for the world, we need to acknowledge that disconnect, like the work that we do is bridging that disconnect from the world that we hope to see and the world that exists. And that manifests itself in many different ways, but, you know, just being cognizant of that.
I'm going to hold some space just to start and finish a poem that I said in the beginning, just because I feel like in the spirit of Black history, just to provide a space and time for the people, the martyrs. So I'll start again. I want my kids to go to Michael Brown University and have water balloon fights on Rakia Boyd Avenue. I hope they shoot hoops in Arizona Park, and I hope they get to drive through Trayvon Martin Triborough Bridge just to study at Philando Castile Library. And after, I hope they eat at Walter Scott Restaurant and burn off the itis and stroll through Kenny Watkins Boulevard. And if they have some change, I hope they roll a little dice at Pat Harmon's Casino and do some community service at Diallo Rec Center. And if they have some kids, I hope they go to Zell Ford High and step on the Sandra Bland step team. Run track and field for the Freddie Gray Sports Club. I hope they start their own school called Ayanna Jones Elementary. And down the block, I hope they all visit the Tamir Rice Museum. I think you get the point. All my kids live in a world where Black lives did not get to. Again, we thank you for listening to the Three Educated Brothers podcast, a podcast about all things education through the experience of three Black men. And once again, my name is Mark.
My name is Ed.
And my name is Gladstone.
Yes. Peace. And tune in, forward, follow, email.